In the summer of 1941, a Jewish immigrant from Russia was slowly but methodically building a retail empire. 30 years earlier, he had arrived in the United States, attempting to support himself by peddling lemonade on the streets of Washington, D.C. He soon found himself penniless, and, based on his misguided belief that the people of Berks County spoke Yiddish, he packed his bags and relocated to Reading, where he soon discovered that the language spoken was Pennsylvania Dutch. The young man persevered, however, and immediately went to work selling dry goods from door to door, carrying his wares in a sack draped over his shoulder like a Jewish Santa Claus. By 1921, he had saved enough money to open his first dry goods store on the corner of 9th and Pike Streets. From these humble beginnings, Solomon Boscov would go on to found a chain of department stores bearing his name. Amazingly, while many brick-and-mortar department store chains are dropping like flies, Boscov's continues to thrive. The chain's 50th location opened last year in West Virginia. However, Boscov's life was not without its share of nightmares. His first wife, Bertha, died after an operation in 1920 at the age of 25. They had been married for just 9 months. And then, one day in August of 1941, Solomon Boscov opened an icebox door and came face to face with one of the most chilling murders in Pennsylvania history. Eight-year-old Billy Crewson was last seen by his parents on the morning of Wednesday, August 13th, 1941. After 48 hours had passed without his return, police began a methodical but daunting search of abandoned buildings in a northwest section of Reading. Neighborhood children were questioned by officers, but they were unable to provide any answers. A mailman, however, was able to provide police with a clue. Billy had walked with him on his route the day of his disappearance. Billy and the mailman parted ways at around 2:30 that afternoon, at a point about a half block away from the Crewson home at 1230 North 10th Street. This was encouraging news, leading authorities to believe that Billy could not have gotten very far. But as the day drew to a close without further clues, city police enlisted the aid of 5 Boy Scout troops to join the search. When this failed, the decision was made to drag an abandoned reservoir about a mile from the boys' home. On August 18th, as the search for Billy Crewson stretched into its fourth day, Captain Jonathan Brightville of the Railroad Police Force announced that every freight car known to have been on a railroad siding near the Crewson home had been opened and searched, with some of the freight cars having traveled as far away as Buffalo. But yet again, not a clue was found. That same day, the Congregation of the Church of God, which was located next door to the Crewson home, prayed fervently that he would be located safe and sound. Sadly, their prayers would only be half answered. Meanwhile, 50-year-old Solomon Boscov had a plan to lease out one of the buildings he owned, a vacant grocery store at 1300 North 10th Street, which stood just a half block away from the Crewson home. On the morning of Tuesday, August 19th, Boscov was showing a prospective tenant named Harold Stubbs the building when he detected an unpleasant odor. He traced the odor to a large wooden industrial refrigerator on the first floor, which hadn't been occupied since early March. He opened the door to the ice compartment, expecting to find long-forgotten steaks, spoiled vegetables, or perhaps a dead rat. Instead, he found Billy Crewson.
Oh my God.
The child's body had been stuffed headfirst into the ice compartment of the refrigerator. The shoes had been removed and jammed into the ice compartment under Billy's head. The compartment was only 18 inches wide, 2 feet high, and 5 feet deep. A tin box was on the floor next to the appliance. Boskov was neither an expert in matters of crime nor human physiology, but it seemed to the immigrant merchant that Billy could not have climbed into the icebox on his own. After processing what he had seen, he composed himself and notified the police. Detective Harold Oswald and Lieutenant Detective A.B. Morris also realized that the death could not have been accidental. Police had a difficult time extracting the body from the compartment and noted that the latch to the icebox had been fastened from the outside.
"I think, without a doubt, the boy was dead before he was placed in there," stated Deputy Coroner Michael Austin following his preliminary investigation. "However, an autopsy will clear up all doubts."
Since the refrigerator was plainly visible through the store windows, it seemed evident that the body was stuffed into the icebox under the cover of darkness. The body showed no signs of violence, and a prevailing theory was that Billy had been a victim of a sex maniac. Pennsylvania Oddities will return after this brief message.
When I want to hear stories about the odd and bizarre, I listen to the Pennsylvania Oddities podcast. But when I want to buy something that's odd and bizarre, I go to www.shopphantasmagoria.com.
Phantasmagoria Antiques and Oddities is an online oddity store showcasing hand-selected items from some of the darker and stranger parts of history.
Phantasmagoria buys and sells rare and unique items from the Victorian era up to the swinging 60s.
From medical oddities and rare books to fine photography, artwork, and one-of-a-kind decor items, Phantasmagoria has got something for every taste, so long as it's a taste for the bizarre.
Visit www.shopphantasmagoria.com and be sure to follow at Phantasmagoria Oddities on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest to stay on top of the new items as they arrive. International shipping is also available.
Phantasmagoria is where I go to add to my own personal collection of oddities, and you should too.
That's www.shopphantasmagoria.com.
Billy was wearing overalls at the time of his death, the same clothes he had been wearing when he had disappeared on the afternoon of August 13th. Solomon Boskov remembered that he had paid a visit to the store on August 14th and had noticed that the padlock on the front door had been forced open. He thought little of it at the time. The building was empty, and there was nothing inside worth stealing. An autopsy revealed the true horror of Billy Crewson's final moments. 37 scratches were found on the inside of the icebox door. The deputy coroner had been wrong. Billy was alive when he was jammed into the compartment. A half-inch drainpipe had provided Billy with enough air to survive for 3 or 4 days of unfathomable fear and agony. His arms and legs were so cramped that he had virtually no ability to struggle inside the ice compartment. The autopsy also confirmed that Billy had been sexually assaulted many times before his death. Police learned from Billy's friends that other neighborhood boys had been approached in recent weeks by an itinerant scissor sharpener, a man described as a shabby, unshaven stranger who was known by the name of Tony, and who had attempted to lure the boys to a hobo camp about 5 blocks away from the vacant grocery store. One particularly strange detail they discovered was that a few neighborhood children had been heard chanting, "Billy is locked in an icebox," long before the body was discovered by Solomon Boskov. As local children were known to have played inside the abandoned building, police wondered if some of the neighborhood boys had stumbled across the body but had been too terrified to report their find to their parents. Some even wondered if the heinous crime might have been committed by one of Billy's playmates. To reenact Billy's death, detectives recruited children of various sizes to crawl into the death chamber and concluded that it was possible for a boy of Billy's size to squeeze into the compartment, raising the possibility that Billy might have tried hiding from his abuser. After the discovery, Reverend H.C. Stopp of the Church of God spent the day consoling Billy's grief-stricken family, comprised of roofer Amos Crewson, his wife Lena, their oldest son, 13-year-old Russell, 11-year-old Paul, and teenage daughters Beatrice and Pearl.
"I used to dream my son was calling for help,"
said Lena Crewson.
"I couldn't eat because I kept thinking Billy was hungry somewhere. That's all over now. I know where my boy is."
It seemed that bad luck had followed Billy Crewson since an early age. When he was 4 years old, he fell on a sidewalk and fractured his skull. And just 1 year before his death, he suffered a broken leg after being hit by a car. As a result of his injuries, Billy never had the opportunity to attend school, though his parents had hoped to enroll him in September. On Friday, August 22nd, a private funeral service for Billy was held at the family home on 10th Street, and his body lay to rest at Forest Hills Memorial Park. More than 2,000 mourners had paid their respects at the funeral home for the viewing the previous evening, with lines stretching around the block. Mingled among the mourners were several undercover officers. With only a few clues to go on, detectives searched hobo camps along the Schuylkill River for the tramp known only as Tony. Dozens of vagrants were rounded up by authorities and questioned, but nobody seemed to know the whereabouts of the wandering scissor sharpener. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Detective Morris was not ready to rule out the possibility of accidental death. Coroner Good wasn't ready to commit to either possibility, stating that, while the body clearly showed signs of sexual assault, there was no proof that the assault had been carried out the same day he was put into the icebox. To calm public fears that a serial molester might be on the loose, Mayor Harry Mangus assigned 200 city patrolmen to make daily inspections of all vacant and abandoned buildings in Reading. As the week drew to a close, the sex maniac theory was somewhat weakened when detectives learned that Billy, a weak and sickly child, had been subjected to severe bullying from an early age by older boys in the neighborhood, raising the possibility that the actual perpetrator might have been a boy not much older than the victim, perhaps even a relative. Though the strange death of Billy Crewson was one of the most sensational stories of 1941 in Pennsylvania, by year's end, very little was printed about the investigation. And then, on December 7th, the nation's eyes turned to a little-known naval base in Hawaii. The surprise attack on Pearl Harbor forced the United States into World War II, and the war provided the murderer, if such a murderer ever existed, an opportunity to escape justice. It's interesting to wonder if the unknown killer received cosmic justice thousands of miles away on the battlefields of Europe or on the islands of the South Pacific, or if perhaps guilt compelled him to seek a watery grave in the Schuylkill River, just a few blocks away from where a future retail tycoon made a blood-chilling discovery inside a forgotten icebox. If the true killer was a boy about Billy's age, he would be around 91 years old today, meaning that there is a remote possibility that he may still be alive. However, there are a few other interesting footnotes in the story. Billy's father, Amos Ellsworth Crewson, died at the age of 56. His date of death is listed as August 21st, 1947, the 6th-year anniversary of the day when thousands of Berks County residents lined up to pay their respects to Billy Crewson. According to his obituary in the Reading Eagle, Amos Crewson died from a fractured skull after falling from a roof on which he was working on Carsonia Avenue. It's also interesting to note that Billy's older brother Paul appears in 1950 census records as a 20-year-old inmate of the Huntington Reformatory for Young Offenders. Since the reformatory housed offenders between ages of 15 and 25, it's unclear if Paul was a minor at the time of his conviction, since there doesn't seem to be any records describing what crime or crimes he had committed to wind up in such a place, and since all members of the immediate family are now deceased, one can only wonder if he was in any way connected to his brother's tragic death. Of course, it would be absolutely wrong to rush to any judgment. For all anyone knows, Paul could have been sent to Huntington for robbing a newsstand or taking someone's car for a joyride. But as far as the case of Billy Crewson goes, it seems rather strange that the story should drop off the front pages of every newspaper in Pennsylvania after only 1 week. This seems to suggest that the case was indeed solved, but the aged perpetrator prevented his identity from being disclosed to the public. But then again, this is only a theory. Until we know for sure, the 1941 death of Billy Crewson remains an unsolved mystery. If you enjoyed this podcast, pick up a copy of my newest book, Pennsylvania Oddities, Volume 3, available now at www.sunburypress.com. Volume 3 features 30 remarkable but true stories from every corner of the Keystone State. And be sure to visit my blog, paoddities.blogspot.com, for over 600 bizarre tales of murder and mystery from the colonial era to the present day. The Pennsylvania Oddities podcast is written, produced, and narrated by Marlon Bressy. Theme music composed by Marlon Bressy. Sound effects courtesy of freesound.org. Listen to the Pennsylvania Oddities podcast on Anchor, Breaker, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and anywhere else you find your favorite program. New episodes on the 1st and 15th of every month. Bye-bye.